Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Basketball Fiends Podcast, a proud member of the Arestino Podcast Network. My name is Jesus Acevedo Jr., and with me as always is Alex Aguilera. Now, Alex, I have a question for you, Alex. You're a hooper, I'm a hooper, we're both ballers who like to, you know, get out there and showcase our skills. Have you ever been hurt that this injury prevented you from playing for a good amount of time, maybe 2 months, 3 months? What was that feeling when you first stepped back on the court, when you just actually shot the basketball, just actually dribbled? Can you remember that? First, tell me the injury and then tell me with that feeling.
Okay, so it wasn't that bad. I played through the injury, so I think it was eighth grade.
Okay. We got a warrior over here.
it was eighth grade. Our basketball team that one year was really good. We ended up going like undefeated in the regular season. So there was one game we were playing our school rival, and a guy stepped on my toe, and I felt like my toe kind of like cave in a little bit.
Ooh.
And I just had like this sharp pain in my toe, and I'm kind of limping. I'm trying to look at my coach like, hey, man, like my foot like really hurts. And he didn't sub me out. Like I played basically that whole game with the starting lineup. And so eventually like the pain kind of went away, like, you know, adrenaline. And I get home and there's like this little like blood stain on my sock. And of course I'm wearing white socks. Just like a bunch of blood. The toenail kind of like caved in a little bit like I had felt. But I wasn't out for that long. Like we didn't have to play for like maybe another week or so. So like by then I felt like I was good to go, but never have I been out for like months at a time with an injury. I've been fortunate in that case.
Well, the worst I had in my case, I twisted my ankle and kind of not broken or shattered, but kind of sprained. It was a sprained ankle. I had to have a boot. Oh my God. That was one of the worst. And it just, you couldn't put weight on it. But that feeling when I got back on the court, I think I was out maybe about a month, 2 months before I could really actually feel comfortable. I mean, I got on there and shot, but I actually play. Like, you know, it took me 2-3 months to get comfortable. And there's nothing like that feeling when you're out there, when you're playing with somebody and that competitive spirit comes out. And faithful listeners, the reason why I break up injuries and coming back from an injury is because one of the NBA greats came back and made his, not debut, but it feels like it because he's been missing for 23 games. And that's Kevin Durant, Alex. He played for the first time in a long time. Like I said, he missed 23 games. He's actually missed 19 of the Nets' 51 games this season before Wednesday's games. And what did you make of KD's return to the Nets, Alex?
I mean, first of all, it was so nice to see him. Like, that's a guy that, oh my God, it's just so enjoyable to watch when he's on the floor.
His game is just so smooth. I mean, you just enjoy the way he plays the game. And everything comes easy to him. And, yeah.
Yeah, it just looks so smooth, just so buttery. Like, I don't know how to put him in. I just love
buttery. I like that.
Buttery. But yeah, I mean, just some little things you would expect, you know, coming back from for as long as he's been out. I mean, I saw some turnovers. Some of the passing looked a little off, like not as sharp as you normally expect from him. But I mean, he was perfect from the field. I mean, that jump shot, like, was not affected by any means.
If anything, maybe it got better because I'm pretty sure that's all he could do was just shoot, like, still. Like, just stay there and just shoot, shoot in position.
Yeah, man, just that pull-up or, like, a catch-and-shoot situation, man. Just the stroke that he has and the follow-through. Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, and he did have a little mistakes in their turnovers, but I think it was him trying to find himself back in the game, you know, because just as I was mentioning earlier, that that first game back, there's all this adrenaline because you're so excited. But the rhythm of the game isn't there. It's still not there. You're still trying to find your way back. And, you know, he's also playing with players that weren't on the team the last time he played, like Blake Griffin, you know. But it was definitely good to see him back. And it's good that he came back because now James Harden is expected to miss up to 10 games with, I believe it's a hamstring injury that he kind of picked up against the Houston Rockets recently. And he just
was 10 games or 10 days?
10 games, sorry. 10 games. Did I say 10 days? 10 games.
10 games. Okay.
Yeah. That would have been breaking news. Basketball Fiends would have been breaking news if that was the case. But yes, I'm sure the Nets are happy that KD is back. But now, you know, the question is on the Nets, how soon can KD find that rhythm? Because he has 17 points in what, about 18 minutes? So he was very effective. But with James Harden now, they're really going to have to hope that KD can find his game quicker. And by game, I don't mean like scoring, because he's going to score, but it's about making the right plays, getting that essence of the game back.
Yeah, for sure. And I think on the defensive end too, I think it's probably like the biggest question mark with the Brooklyn Nets is, we already know that, you know, on the offensive side, you got a bunch of scorers, you got a bunch of closers in that trio there. But how are these guys going to be able to commit on the defensive end? I think that's something to watch out with KD as well, because now obviously the hamstring injury, you know, same area where he had torn his Achilles. So just, I think on the defensive side of the ball, you know, how much do we see him become more aggressive? You know, that's something that'll probably take time, because obviously, like you said, it's going to take him a little bit to get back into the rhythm of things, being out for quite some time and also just being with new guys. So, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, you know, because I think it needs to be said, when Kevin Durant is healthy, he's an effective defensive player. He uses his size and his length to his advantage, and it helps the team out. You know, I know when he was with OKC, he wasn't as great of a defender. You know, he showed flashes, but it wasn't until he got with Golden State that he really started to shine and make defensive plays. So, and I think you're 100% right on that. I think that's where they also need Kevin Durant, as much as they need him on the offensive. And right now, when James Harden comes back, KD can kind of relax a bit on offense and maybe focus a bit more on defense, because they're not going to have to rely, go get 40 or 30. No, because you have James Harden, you still got Kyrie Irving. And hopefully by that time comes, he's fully able to go 100%. You know, because I'm sure right now there may be some things he's still afraid to do while he gets comfortable, you know, and that happens. That definitely happened to me when I first got on the court after I hurt my ankle. I couldn't go 100% as I wanted to. Some moves, some certain, pivots. Right. I was like, I don't feel comfortable just yet. So I think you're dead spot on. Like, that's going to take some time. But now if he comes back and he plays defense like the Kevin Durant that we saw at the Golden State Warriors, then that solves some answers or some questions about this Brooklyn's Nets defense.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I mean, just little things like you said, whether it's, coming off a screen, when he turns his leg a certain way, if he tweaks it, just being mindful of that. So, I mean, that's honestly more of a question mark to me in regards to Kevin Durant than, what happens on the offensive end. Because already we saw, dude was fine in, 20 minutes of game time, and he was perfect from the field, had, 17 points or something like that. So we know he'll be fine there. I think it's just on the defensive side. Is where you want to see if he can get back to, that Kevin Durant of Golden State, where he was fully healthy and, made an impact.
Definitely. And, he was playing with players that weren't even on the team when he joined us. We said one of those was LaMarcus Aldridge, who the Brooklyn Nets got in the buyout market. And when I bring up the buyout market, Alex, because there were some more player movements in the buyout market. A couple of players were released. Ben McLemore was released by the Houston Rockets. The Marcus Cousins, who had been bought out already. And Isaiah Thomas, who had been on the free agent market for a while. So these three players signed. We're going to start with Ben McLemore. He went to the LA Lakers. And Alex, I got to say, I love this move for the Lakers when LeBron James and AD are playing. Because Ben McLemore, he's not going to create your shot. He needs creators. And that's when... this is a great addition when LeBron James and AD are on the team.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Ben McLemore is a very, very good three-point shooter. I think just from that skill set, I think it's a great pickup for the Lakers. That's something that, any team will want, and that's certainly something the Lakers need. And obviously, I just feel like it's sort of a low-risk pickup,
right?
Per se, where... You know exactly what you're getting out of him. You're definitely getting a spot up shooter.
And if that specific night he's not hitting, okay, go take a seat. Maybe he'll start hitting next game. So he knows what he's there for. But I bring that up about, because right now the Lakers are without LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So right now Ben McLemore is not gonna help you as much as when those two playmakers. Well, LeBron and AD, when those two players come back.
Right. I mean, when you have a guy like LeBron or AD open up the floor offensively, that's where Ben McLemore shines. He can sit in the corner, a quick catch and shoot, and, he'll drain that shot. But when you don't have LeBron or AD on the floor, it kind of closes things up. And it's like, yeah, he can try, you know, try to do something offensively, but you know that you're not going to get that playmaking ability out of him, you know, not to compare him to LeBron, you know, in that aspect, but you know that he shines better when a playmaker is on the floor to you know, just literally open up the floor and get him open for a shot.
But I mean, also, it's also going to help LeBron James and Anthony Davis, because guess what? The defender's not going to help off of Ben. There's no way you're going to help off of Benny Mac, because you know, if you leave him, he has a second. He's going to shoot it, and more often than not, it's going to go in. So it's going to help LeBron James have more space to create, and also AD for his post offense when he does it. I know sometimes he doesn't like to post up as much, but even then, it's going to create space for them as a team. And I think, you know, as we're staying in L.A., we're going to go out with the player DeMarcus Cousins. He signed with the L.A. Clippers. And DeMarcus Cousins was out there for a while. He got bought out by the Rockets, I want to say, even before the trade deadline. So he decided to sign with the Clippers. And his debut, not too bad. He had 7 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists in 7 minutes. And at this point, you know, Cousins said, "I'm probably in the best shape I've been in my entire career." And well, hey, who am I to say that he's not? I don't know. He is. He definitely looks in shape. I definitely saw a lot of games here in Houston, and he was definitely a player that can still contribute to a team. But he's not a player you're going to rely on. So I like this addition for the Clippers, especially since Serge Ibaka is hurt. So that's definitely a good addition for them. And, you know, it's kind of the same situation with Benny Mac and with the Lakers. If Cousins, you see, is kind of struggling, sit him down.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely certainly be the case with the Clippers. I think what I see with DeMarcus Cousins is just adding depth for the Clippers. I think once you get Serge Ibaka back, you know that's your starting center for the most part. But, you know, coming off the bench, yeah, you sit him out, you got DeMarcus Cousins coming right in. And we all know he's a very skillful center. And I think whether or not, you know, you believe he's in the best shape of his career, you know, knowing that, you know, like, regardless of that, like, if this guy is coming in with the mindset that he is, like, that's awesome. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's just coming in confident, knowing exactly what he wants to do with this team. So, you know, he could care less, you know, what we think of whether or not he's in the best shape of his career. If that's what he thinks, that's exactly what the Clippers need. And probably more so just coming off the bench, it just benefits him even more.
And I think you hit upon, I think he has the right mentality. You know, he, in the same article where I pulled that quote, you know, he said, you know, I'm here to help this team win. I'm here to help in any way I can with my set of skills. So he knows what he's there for. And I think that's what makes him a good addition for the Clippers. And look, he probably is in the best shape of his career, you know.
He's coming off a lot of major injuries, man. It's hard to fully recover from that.
Right, right. So, you know, it could be a situation where he's still working his way back. But like I said, in spurts, he can be very effective. So another player who can be very effective in spurts and has proved it for a long time is IT Isaiah Thomas. You know, he was out of the league for, what, almost 14 months, I want to say. He finally latched onto the team when the Pelicans signed him to a 10-day contract. And I think we should also say the Clippers signed DeMarcus Cousins to a 10-day contract. So now IT signs a 10-day contract with the Pelicans. And I got to say, in his first game, not bad. 10 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 25 minutes of action. And again, Alex, this is a player that they're not asking him, hey, carry the team. They're just saying, hey, help us. You know, help us do what you do. Do it on the court.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think at one point Isaiah Thomas had like 8 straight points. Yes, a little stretch in that game against the Hawks. So you see that little flash of the MVP caliber Isaiah Thomas. But that's not what the Pelicans need. And you kind of saw it again with against Brooklyn, where, I mean, even though they got blown out, he had 11 points off the bench. Yep. I mean, the Pelicans have other issues on the defensive end. You know, that's a whole nother thing. But at least, you know, you have, you know, what looks to be another reliable scoring option coming off the bench with Isaiah Thomas. So, like you said, these aren't guys that you expect them to play as they were when they were in their prime, when they were, you know, 100% healthy. These are guys that, you know, are coming off major injuries and, you know, have been you know, grinding just to, you know, find some stability with a team. And I think this is a good place for Isaiah Thomas to, you know, really show that he can still play the game.
Well, I definitely think, and, you know, I hope for IT, I hope this kind of starts him on a string of where he's kind of plays a Jamal Crawford kind of role, a, you know, Lou Williams kind of role, where he's just like a instant scoring off the bench. Because I think that's the kind of role that fits him. You know, we're like, hey, you know, we need some scoring, like, you know, spurts. Because he can, once he starts rolling, he can hit. He, like you say, he had 8 points in his first game back in 14 months straight. Like, he's that quick with the shot, and he's still got some of that quickness. Yeah, He still has that ability. That ability that he showed. You know where he showed it that we all took notice? The Boston Celtics, Alex. And that's our next topic. The Boston Celtics, which I put this on our list because I'm not sure what to make of the Boston Celtics, Alex. They are a team that, you know, are hovering around 500. I think they're just at 500 at the time of recording this episode. They've been to the Eastern Conference 3 out of the last 4 years, but it seems like this team it doesn't know what it is, you know. And the reason why I say this, because Dwayne Wade was on Inside the NBA recently, and he said, you know, he said what I've been thinking is that the Celtics don't seem to have an identity. And, you know, now that's different from saying they have talent, because they have talent. But having talent and having an identity are two different things. So that's what I want to see from Boston. And I wonder, what is their identity? What kind of team are they?
Absolutely, man. Dwayne Wade, I mean, when you're one of the greatest of all time, you can kind of see when a team is off and what they're lacking. And I think he hit it right on the nail when he says that this team doesn't have an identity. Like, when you see Boston play, and granted, like, I don't watch Boston Celtics basketball a ton, just forewarning you, but when I do see them play, like, you feel this sense of confusion in a way. Like, they don't necessarily always know exactly what they want to do. Like, is this a half-court team? Is this a team that likes to run and get in transition? You know, we don't really know, like, what they are, exactly what it is, like, what identity that they have. Of course they have talent. They have, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. You know, that right there alone is some of the best talent in the league. But even then, it's like, you look at Jason Tatum, sometimes, you know, he has these questionable decisions. Right. You definitely want more. Like, you know he can score and he can get buckets. But, you know, just for him to take that next step as maybe being, you know, more of a playmaker and not, you know, forcing shots or forcing passes. So it's, you know,
it's sort of
they
like
they got to work.
Like
they got stuff to work out.
They got stuff to work out, you know, and a lot of the time the talent builds them out, you know, because talent will always build you out. Right. But in the playoffs this season, I don't know how much that talent will build them out. You know, we've all expected for Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown for one of them to take the next step. But I think most see Jason Tatum as having higher ceiling than Brown. So we've expected him to take the next step, but we just don't see it. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, who's the leader on the Boston Celtics team? You know, like who's their guy? Like, if I need a shot, who's gonna take it? I know they go between Tatum and Brown, but you know, we can't forget you also have Kemba Walker there. And I actually thought Kemba Walker was gonna be a good addition to the team, and it's been so far, it's been okay. You know, it's been an okay addition. I thought he was gonna put him over the top. So it's been, now I know they've been dealing with some COVID 19 protocols, but then again, you know, what team has it? And it's hard to say, but it's also not an excuse. I mean, Philadelphia 76ers, ever without Joel Embiid, arguably the league's MVP before he got hurt, and they've been able to manage. So it's also, and that goes back to saying, you know, maybe because Philadelphia has that identity. So when Joel went out, Philadelphia was able to still run his game plan, run his system, and not miss a beat. Granted, they lost games, so obviously, you know, you're going to miss Joel, right? But you want to be able to weather the storm and maybe do better than that, like beat the storm. And so I think that's the problem with Boston, is that they have talent, just no identity. Because, come on, Danny Ainge is a top GM. Brad Stevenson is a hell of a coach. And I hate to even wonder, is Brad Stevenson's words falling on deaf ears? Is it that kind of situation, perhaps? Which I don't think so, because, right, I hope Brad Stevenson is in such high regard, but it has to be asked.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You definitely have to address that. When you have a team like the Boston Celtics, where on paper there's a ton of talent between just like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kemba Walker alone. You know, that's a team that you would expect to be competing, you know, with the best of the best in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, I mean, they just beat the Knicks today, 101-99. But, you know, this is a team that shouldn't be, you know, scraping away at a playoff spot in the bottom. This should be, you know, a 3-4 seed easily, yep. And they're not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know what's going on with Brad Stevens per se. I'm not saying that he is the problem by any means, but you definitely, you know, the issues that we're pointing out with, you know, Jason Tatum a little bit, Kemba Walker, how he hasn't been, you know, producing the way people expected. You also have to look at Brad Stevens as well and say, hey, like, you know, what does he see with this roster? And, you know, like, how is he, you know, calling plays to just make sure that, you know, this team can run well? I mean, I know my words are a little jumbled up, but, you know, it's so bizarre and confusing that it's hard to wrap your mind around.
It is. I mean, especially when, you know, and I'll repeat it again, they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals 3 out of the last 4 years. So, and it's a lot of the same players, at least the core players, which is, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. You know, they were rookies when they led the, not rookies, I think one was rookie, one was the second year, when they led them to the Eastern Conference Finals. So you expected them to learn from all those trips, and it feels like they've, like you said, they've yet to take in the next step. Now, here's what I'll say before we go on to our last topic. Could it be Boston Celtics saying, hey, we just need to get into the playoffs. Once we're there, we'll flip the switch. Could it be that kind of situation?
Maybe, we'll see. I don't know, but I think just more than anything, first, the Celtics do need to find that identity. You know, what type of team do they want to be? And then from there, hopefully, the hope is that the rest of the problems can work themselves out once they establish, you know, what they want to be, first and foremost.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, do you know one team that knows what it wants to be and it accomplished that? Was the Baylor Bearcats. They wanted to be NCAA men's college basketball champions, and they are it. And that is our final topic, is the men's and women's college basketball championship. But we're going to start with the men's. The Final Four was great. Baylor steamrolled Gonzaga, pretty much. You know, it was a game all college basketball fans were expecting to see for most of the season, Alex, but it was not the game that we expected.
No, not at all. This is where I kind of wish. I believe they were supposed to play each other earlier in the regular season. I think that would have been sort of a projection to see if these teams, you know, played in the tournament, which they did. Baylor was the superior team by far.
From the get-go. Wire to wire.
Like, it just wasn't even fair. I mean, you saw Gonzaga sort of, you know, clawed back a little bit, but they could never really close the gap against Baylor. And just, man, that defense just stomped on that Gonzaga offense. They looked so lost. They didn't know, you know, what to do, how to navigate through it. And then Baylor was just hitting damn near every shot they put up, especially from 3-2. Davion
Mitchell, Butler. Yeah, it was just, they were just knocking lights out. And, you know, it goes back to a comment I made during our first March Madness episode or segment was that Gonzaga, they're undefeated, but they hadn't yet been tested. They were just whooping on everybody, you know? Yeah. And in these Final Four, in their two games, they got tested because they had to scrap past UCLA, which is one of the greatest games I've seen in recent history. I'm sure you'll agree. One of the greatest finishes, greatest games, greatest finishes, you know? Jalen Suggs hits a shot just after half court, runs to the court. Runs on top of the scoreboard. I mean, who doesn't love that? And so I wonder if that big test and that such a high from that game, if it was just the championship game, just pale in comparison. Not pale in comparison, it's a championship game, but just the high from that, you know? And Grant Hill touched upon it because he was on the commentators. He said after Christian Laettner hit their shot against Kentucky, when they came onto the championship game, in their first half, they were just flat. He said, and luckily, we were able to scratch back in the second half. Gonzaga never had that opportunity because Baylor did not let the gas pedal off.
Nah, it looked like, you know, for Gonzaga, they had to put everything they could just to edge out against UCLA. And, you know, when it came to the national championship, it felt anticlimactic in the sense where, you know, that greatness and that drama that we saw them pull off against UCLA felt like it was all used up and they didn't really have much left in the tank to, you know, really go toe-to-toe with Baylor.
And, you know, shout out to UCLA. They fought. They clawed. They did everything. And I thought we had overtime. That's where I thought the game was going. I never in a million years thought Gonzaga was going to get shut out. But props to Gonzaga. You know, they had a great season. But Baylor, shout out to Baylor bringing a Texas a college basketball championship. So shout out to Baylor. It's their first one since... It's the first one, actually, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, first one.
Yeah, it is their first one. I was like, since forever, man. Like, they never won one.
So, yeah. So, it'd be interesting. Baylor, yeah. They're three-guard setup, which is pretty interesting that a lot of NBA teams have actually gone with the three-guard lineup, which I think OKC was one of the first ones to do it when Chris Paul was there last season. And it started. It's interesting to see how it's trickled out to basketball. Or who knows? Maybe it started in basketball first and went to the NBA.
Something you might see in the near future with college basketball teams trying to eye three solid guards to work around.
And you know, and besides just guards, I think we should be more a little bit more specific. It's three creators. You know, three people who can create with the ball, whether it's create your shot, just create something, make a play. You know, playmakers. I think it's a better word for a playmaker. And you know who's a playmaker, Alex, as we go on to the women's college basketball? Is Arizona star Erin McDonough. She can hoop. She took the Arizona team upset over UConn, which that was close. That was a good game, too. They were going back and forth, and, you know, they squeaked past UConn. And what do we say? They said, if Arizona gets past UConn, they're going to get past whoever wins because you're just getting past UConn. And they almost did it, Alex. Arizona almost did it. But Stanford put through right at the end. Stanford is your women's college basketball champions first time since 1992.
Man, now that was a national championship game.
That was the national and that's that, how you left it to the end. That was a game.
Oh, man. So at first, pretty much what you kind of saw with Baylor and Gonzaga is that, you know, that first half lead can be a little deceiving, and that was the case with Stanford and Arizona. Definitely not the case with Baylor and Gonzaga. That was clearly the case, you know, throughout the whole game. But you saw Stanford go out to a quick lead early on, and you saw Arizona, you know, regroup, make stops. You know, Erin McDonough leading the way with Arizona, I think leading all scorers in that game, and they clawed back and fought back. And I think when you look at Stanford and also Haley Jones making some big plays down the stretch, you saw that when Arizona came back, Stanford did not let them pull away by any means. You know, Arizona would find their way to claw back, but Stanford made stops. Stanford made stops when they needed them the most, and especially on that last play.
That was key. That was key. When they needed to, because there was points about, Arizona's going to take it right here, and Stanford's one way or another, they just found a way to make that key stop.
They would make a key stop and come down the floor, get a quick little and one. And, man, it just, you know, at the end of the day, that's how it wound up being a one-point game. And, you know, shouts out, kudos to Erin McDonough, who had two defenders draped all over her.
Yep.
And the shot looked good. It was online.
I thought it was going in. I was like, oh, my God, she did. But, no, it just clanked out. But it was – that screams to the talent that Erin McDonough has draped on her. Like you said, they were on her like a cheap suit, like just draped.
I was just like, oh, man, I see the defenders. I was like, man, I don't even think she can get the shot off. And I just see the ball, like, shoot out of her hands. And I see the arc. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, how does she even, like, get that off to begin with? And it actually looks good.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, shout out to Stanford. They played I think Stanford had a more deeper bench as well. They went 11 deep. You know, I think Arizona went eight deep. So Stanford definitely has the more talented. So they, you know, well deserved. But shout out to Adia Barnes, Arizona coach. I know a lot of people came out after her after Arizona beat UConn, you know, because she kind of, the camera was on her and she didn't know, you know, the camera was on her and she kind of flipped the birds, you know, as to all the haters. And you know what? I'm all for it. I'm all for
hell
it.
Hell yeah.
Men coaches do that all the time. And, you know, there's no like, oh, you know, what do you think? Should you think you should apologize? I mean, you know, those are the passions of the game. You know, she didn't know a camera was on her. That was just her expressing her feelings with her team. So I'm all for it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just the passion and too, like UConn, you know what type of program UConn has been for years. You know, that's the program that you want to be. You know, if you don't go to UConn, you know, then you're going to a program that so that you can beat UConn. And just, you know, if you're not going to UConn, then you damn well want to beat them. And that's exactly what, you know, Arizona did. And just the passion of it, just the, you know, the F-bombs, whatever. Okay, it may not, you know, look pretty, but, you know, I like you said, I'm all for it. I love it, man.
And now here's the thing that upset me, too, is that it felt good because in the video before the Final Four starts, you know, they'll show a video of the four teams. So apparently they didn't show Arizona much or even at all. So it was almost like a slide, like, wow. You know, so I said the really? Two fingers felt a little bit more appropriate because it was like, for the haters, like nobody thought we could be here and here we are. So I'm all for it, you know.
Yeah, man. It's like if you're going to call her out, you know, for throwing a couple F-bombs. I mean, I was on the sideline for football games, baseline for basketball games, and some of the stuff I heard from coaches.
From oh fans, my goodness. Too.
From fans, too. Like, honestly, those F-bombs are nothing compared to other stuff you hear. So I don't know why people are complaining.
But also, shout out to her because, I mean, I was reading more about her. And, you know, before the season, you know, she was pregnant. Then she went back to coaching 4 weeks after she gave birth. And she was like, I took a month break, but I was doing face calls. I was doing Zoom. Like, I was still working from bed and you know, still coaching. So, you know, shout out to her. You know, we should normalize working moms. You know, they're amazing. They make things happen.
And people want to call her out for putting up the bird finger or whatever the other scene is and throwing some F-bombs. Come on now.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's our last college basketball topic for I guess for this year. You know, the next time we'll get into college basketball will be maybe closer to NBA draft, you know, but this was fun, you know. There's nothing
for the
like
time
March
being
Madness.
For the time being.
For the time being, yeah, but no, but this was fun. There's nothing like March Madness. I just watching this tournament this year made me realize how much I missed this, and last year we didn't get this opportunity, you know.
Yeah, man. God, I miss college basketball. Like I didn't like it's one of those things where you don't truly appreciate something until it's gone, and that was definitely the case with the NCAA tournament. And man, it was just, and honestly, I will say, like, the women's tournament was better this year.
They had a lot of good games, a lot more closer games too.
Yeah
It was, well, at least the championship game, clearly the championship game.
No, if there's one thing you can't dispute, is those championship games.
Well, yeah, so that's all the time we have for you today. Thank you once again for joining us, people. Don't forget to subscribe. See you.
Deuces.